Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear
Salamonster. Welcome to episode 183 of the Salamonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Sunday, October 9th, 2011. I am the Salamonster. Big thank you to everybody who sent in birthday wishes this week. Of course, my birthday was on Thursday, and I heard from a lot of you. I got a lot of emails, obviously a deluge of comments on Facebook, Twitter, and all that. So big, big thank you to everybody who took a few seconds out of their day to make mine that much more special. I got to tell you that this birthday probably was one of the more fun ones I've ever had. And to all the people who wrote in to tell me that the great Bruno Sammartino shares his birthday with me, get it right. I share my birthday with Bruno Sammartino, not the other way around. And apparently Dixie Carter as well. So it's quite a day. October 6th is each year. A lot of birthdays in the month of October. A lot of baby making going on in the month of October, it seems, over the years. Not quite sure why that is. Or I guess it wouldn't be in October. I guess it would be 9 months before October. So, anyway. The best thing of all was I'm sitting at my computer at work on Thursday, and I get an email from Team Coco. Now, I had filled out a form. Conan O'Brien is coming back to New York to tape some TV shows early next month. He used to tape his show in New York back when he was on NBC. Now he's over in the West Coast. So he's coming back to the Big Apple to do some tapings next month. And I filled out a form, didn't really think anything of it. Put a corny joke in there, figuring perhaps somebody would be amused by my humor and perhaps I would win. And in fact, on my birthday, I got an email back, and I had completely forgotten about this. This was just weeks and weeks earlier. Got an email from them saying that I won. I actually won tickets to one of the tapings that Conan is having in New York City next month, so I am very excited about that. I am, in fact, now a member, an official member of Team Coco. And for those of you Conan O'Brien fans out there, if you've never been to a taping of his show before, I have not. Perhaps if you have, you can shed some light on how it was for you. I'm very excited about this. And most of all, I'm most impressed by the fact that I got this email on my birthday. So basically, of the gifts and the comments and everything I got from everybody, the greatest gift of all was given to me by me. And I just thought that was funny. Those of you who have not listened yet to Sound Off 182, there's a special bonus Sound Off that was posted earlier in the week. I think it went up, I put it up on Tuesday. That was the interview, the exclusive interview that I conducted with wrestling photographer, author, former editor, George Napolitanos, truly a legend in the business and a name that not too many people are aware of. Actually, I shouldn't say that. A lot of people know who George is. A lot of casual fans would not know who he is or of his work, which is a shame because, quite frankly, I said it last week, I think, in hyping up the interview, and I'll say it again. Somebody like George is worthy of being in the WWE Hall of Fame, the Wrestling Hall of Fame. There's a lot of Wrestling Hall of Fames around the country. Perhaps he is already in some of them. I actually didn't ask him about that. But he's had that much of an influence on the business. He's been all over the world. He's taken photographs and done work in that respect for virtually every organization of any significance in the last 30 or 40 years. And just a fascinating interview. I know it's not necessarily everybody's cup of tea, but I can't tell you how many messages I got from people saying that they didn't know what to expect or they figured it would be boring. They're not a big fan of wrestling history and all that. And it really wasn't just about history as far as the 50s and the 60s. I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff in there about wrestling, quote-unquote, history that deals with the 80s, the 90s, the Attitude Era, the 2000s, and a lot of wrestlers that anybody who's been a wrestling fan for any length of time would know. His relationships with people like Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Andre the Giant, the Road Warriors, the Steiner Brothers, Vince McMahon Sr., all of these different people, just fascinating, fascinating stuff. And we also promoted his new book, which is called Hot Shots and High Spots. I said it in the interview. It's on Amazon.com. Completely worth it. You know, if you've got 25 bucks or whatever it is to drop, I cannot recommend it more. I got a review copy and couldn't put the thing down when I first got it. A lot of really cool photographs and some anecdotes and stories as well that go along with it. It's not a hard read at all. I think it's a great book. And I appreciate him taking the time to do that with me. If you haven't seen the interview, it's up there on SEScoops.com. Of course, if you're an iTunes subscriber, probably already got pushed to you. And I still am planning on putting it up on YouTube in the near future. Hopefully, I'll get to that in the next couple of days. So please check the interview out if you haven't already done so. Send in your feedback. It's very important to me. Let me know what you think. I got a lot of great feedback from you guys, some really, really cool comments, and we'll get to some of that in the mailbags, and I just wanted to point that out here for anyone who may have missed it. And also, quite frankly, a big shout-out to Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer for including a link to my interview with Mr. Napolitano in one of his daily updates this week. So, big thank you for that. Top story this week deals with TNA, or should I say Impact Wrestling. Really, I received the ultimate birthday gift this week. I think we all did, after it was reported on Thursday that, yes, Vince Russo is in fact no longer the head writer of the TNA creative team. He has been replaced by Bruce Brother Love Pritchard, who also still heads the talent relations division. He's been working now in TNA for about a year. And as far as I know, he will not be giving up those other responsibilities. He's simply taking on additional ones when it comes to the creative team. Now, I must caution here. I've had a lot of people throughout the week asking me, what do you think of Vince Russo being gone from TNA? Or what do you think of Vince Russo being off the TNA creative team? Vince Russo is not gone from TNA. Vince Russo, in fact, is not even off the TNA creative team. He is still very much a big part of the creative process in Impact Wrestling. However, he is no longer the head writer. He is no longer the mastermind, the puppeteer, if you will, the man who essentially not only writes the shows but also edits them and puts out the finished product. Those days for now are over. He is no longer doing that. The buck does not stop with him. The buck stops with Bruce Pritchard when it comes to that. Russo is now considered a senior writer and will continue to write the actual shows. There's another man who works there by the name of Matt Conway, who has typically written the shows with Russo. He will continue in that capacity as well. And ultimately, the direction of the show, the overall vision of the television show, will be dictated and put together by Bruce Pritchard. This is not something that happened suddenly. This is something that TNA apparently has been preparing for a couple of months now. And it does happen to coincide with what some people would say have been a recent spate of pretty good Impact shows. Now, I cannot judge because I really haven't seen much of Impact over the last couple of weeks. I just haven't had an opportunity to do so. But I've seen people actually heap praise upon TNA, not necessarily for the entire show, but for certain segments, perhaps the way they're pushing Bobby Roode as he prepares for the biggest match of his career in a couple of weeks on pay-per-view. He'll be challenging Kurt Angle for the heavyweight title. So there's things to like and enjoy of late about the TNA product based on what I'm seeing out there in terms of feedback from people. Now, of course, you go on our Facebook page. There are people who have watched Impact lately who have said, you're living in fantasy land. Impact still sucks. Nothing makes sense. People are putting too much stock into this. A couple of good segments does not a good show make. That is true. You know, Impact is a two-hour show. If you have 15 minutes out of a two-hour show, that's pretty good, and the rest is still shit. That's not a good show. But I'm not going to pass judgment because I haven't seen them myself. And quite frankly, I don't know who is responsible for the recent Impacts building up to the pay-per-view. You know, this build to Bound for Glory, maybe it was something Vince Russo wrote. You know, maybe it was something that Bruce Pritchard had a hand in. I don't know. This is something that's going to play out over time. You know, the next Impact, the next three Impacts, it's not going to matter so much as what Impact looks like 6 weeks from now, for example. I've said before, TNA is a promotion that you never want to say they've gone past the point of no return, but you've had a president in Dixie Carter who, for whatever reason, has been resistant to change. She has not wanted to get rid of Vince Russo. Vince Russo seemingly has had an iron claw, an iron grip on the position of head creative writer now for years. Feels like centuries, in fact. And people have theorized that perhaps Vince Russo has naked photographs of Dixie Carter. What other explanation could there be that this woman has let other people go and is willing to make certain changes to her product, but doesn't seem to realize the one person who has been responsible for the vision of this television show over the last couple of years, a poison, a pox on that promotion, has been able to maintain his position without being punished, without being fired, without being demoted. And here we have a situation where Vince Russo has essentially been demoted. We don't know if this is something that Russo volunteered for. There were rumors that go back even a year that Vince Russo was going to voluntarily step aside. He didn't want to do the job anymore. And that never happened. But perhaps where there's smoke, there's fire. Perhaps Vince Russo went to Dixie Carter and said, listen, I'd like to tone down my responsibilities a little bit. I don't want to keep doing this. I'll still be on the team, but you're going to have to find somebody else to be the head writer. And quite frankly, I don't really care who's responsible for the move. This is nothing but a positive. And I don't know what kind of booker or writer Bruce Pritchard is going to turn out to be. He could turn out to be the drizzling shits for all we know. But the one thing TNA needs is vision, because it's something that they've lacked. Or at least the vision they have has sucked. Okay, it has sucked the life out of this promotion. It has sucked the life out of the hopes of wrestling fans that have hoped against hope that this promotion could turn their fortunes around at some point. And I've said for years on this show that as long as Vince Russo is in charge of that product, nothing will ever change. Changes need to start from the top down, not from the bottom up. And this is a positive change. Maybe in 6 weeks or 6 months, I'm eating crow and I'm saying, my God, I wish Vince Russo would come back. I think I will grow a beard, pop out 4 kids, and become president of the United States before that day ever comes. But you never know. Hey, it could happen. Stranger things have happened. Vince Russo that cannot book. He cannot book in 2011. He could not book in 2004. And this is a move that is long overdue. So obviously I applaud TNA for making the move. Whoever's decision it was, even if it was Russo's, I applaud this move for being made. Because really at this point, what the hell do they have to lose? You know, this company is going nowhere. They're spinning their wheels. They're getting the same number every week on TV that they get. They get their 1 or their 1.2. They're clearly not creating any new fans. And this is a problem WWE has as well. But WWE is already a juggernaut. WWE already has a fan base that just completely dwarfs the number of fans that TNA has. So it's a problem for them, but it's less of a problem. TNA is trying to establish themselves. Almost 10 years later, this company is still trying to find themselves. And Vince Russo, to me, has been one of the biggest problems, the biggest obstacles to that happening, because he has such a narrow view of what a wrestling show is supposed to be. And it's wrong. It's a wrong, wrong view. And Bruce Pritchard, what does he bring to the table? Like I said, I don't know. He's a wild card. It was exactly 1 year ago this month that Pritchard was hired by TNA as an agent behind the scenes. That was 2 years after he got let go by WWE, which was a Stephanie McMahon call at the time that Vince went along with. In May of this year, Pritchard was promoted to the position of Vice President of Talent Relations after Terry Taylor resigned from the company. And I do know that at one point, Pritchard was writing shows for the WWF back in the mid-1990s for a brief period of time. And I cannot speak to how long that lasted or what the quality of those shows were like. So again, what kind of impact are we going to be seeing weeks from now in the hands of Brother Love? I don't know, but I'm anxious to find out. And I will say that the build for Bound for Glory appears to, at least in terms of the championship match, be pretty good. You know, they're trying to create a real star in Bobby Roode. They see a lot in Roode and James Storm especially. These are guys that, you know, they've been one of the best tag teams in wrestling now for a while. Which, you know, is it really saying much? Perhaps not, because there's such a lacking for good tag teams in wrestling these days. But still, they're a hell of a tag team. But the thing is, both of these guys can be big players in singles competition. Both of these guys could potentially be world champions one day. And in fact, Bobby Roode ought to be world champion by the time Bound for Glory is over, or this company doesn't have a fucking clue what the hell they're doing. So that's my thoughts on that. Russo replaced, when I read the headline, I really thought to myself, there cannot be a greater gift from God on this my day of birth than the fact that Vince Russo has lost his grip on the position of head writer in TNA. So, actually, you know, I mentioned the Conan O'Brien tickets a little bit earlier, but in fact, it was TNA that gave me the greatest gift of all on my birthday. And that's something that a week ago, I never would have predicted. Another big TNA story, which also broke this week, first reported by PWInsider.com, later by other sites including SE Scoops, that TNA and Hulk Hogan have agreed to terms on a new deal. Not certain that this is in any way connected to the Vince Russo demotion, but you never know. Hogan's previous deal was set to expire apparently this Monday the 10th, which could have made for a most interesting political pickle heading into the Bound for Glory pay-per-view next Sunday. And nothing on Eric Bischoff, although one would expect that if Hogan has re-signed, you know, where Hogan goes, so does Bischoff. In fact, you might even say that if Hulk Hogan were walking down the street and were to stop short, perhaps Eric Bischoff would be buried up his ass. That's been said about the two of them before. So I would imagine Bischoff also is not going anywhere. In fact, I'm almost positive Bischoff is not going anywhere. He's taken on a lot of additional responsibilities behind the scenes in TNA in a production capacity. Creative, I'm not so sure. I know he has some input into the creative process. How much, I don't know. So Hogan and Bischoff, for those of us who were hoping that their time would be coming to an end very soon, apparently that will not happen. And they will be around for some time to come. Hogan is actually going to be making the media rounds on Wednesday and Thursday of this week to promote Bound for Glory. Yes, he will be promoting TNA, people. Can you believe this? I couldn't believe that when I read that. I thought it was a misprint. I had to go back and read it twice. The fact that Hulk Hogan is actually going to be on television and doing radio interviews and such, promoting the fact that, you know, by God, he's actually a wrestler in TNA. Who would have thunk it? He'll be on ESPN. He'll be on the Howard Stern show on Wednesday, today's show on Thursday. So big media opportunity. This could be the biggest media exposure TNA's ever gotten. Hulk Hogan, still one of the biggest names in the history of wrestling, going out and promoting the TNA product in advance of what is to them their WrestleMania. You know, Bound for Glory is supposed to be their big show each year. And speaking of Bound for Glory, the pay-per-view's coming up October 16th in Philadelphia. This is the spoiler lineup, and I say spoiler because I'm not sure that all of these matches have officially been announced on TV. So if you're bothered by knowing what the matches are going to be for the next pay-per-view, you might want to skip ahead. But really, if you skip ahead, it's not a big deal. AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels one-on-one in an I Quit match. I don't know why it's an I Quit match, but apparently it is. But you know what? It's AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels. And really, when have these guys ever had a bad match? You know, they've had some matches that weren't necessarily among their best. But even a match between AJ and Daniels that isn't their best is still better than probably 80% of what you're going to see out there. So there's that. You've got Samoa Joe, Crimson, and Matt Morgan in a three-way match. Winter will be defending her TNA Knockouts title against Mickie James, Velvet Sky, and Madison Rayne in a four-way. Mexican America will defend the TNA Tag Team titles against Ink Inc., a team that, quite frankly, I could not care less about. Austin Aries defends the TNA X Division Championship in a rematch against Brian Kendrick. Mr. Anderson and Bully Ray will meet in a Falls Count Anywhere match. Jerry Lynn and Rob Van Dam in Full Metal Mayhem. TNA World Heavyweight Champion Kurt Angle defends against Bobby Roode in a match where there can really only be one outcome. And Sting will get his match with Hulk Hogan. No disqualification. The two step back in the ring for the first time, probably since the WCW days. Well, actually, I'm positive it's the first time since the WCW days. This will be Hogan's first match in quite a while in TNA, and they're going to have to rely on a lot of smoke and mirrors, probably some juice, some weapons, interference, a TNA main event special, you could call it. Again, this is a match where really Sting should go over, but that's what people said about Starrcade in 1997. And in fact, in fairness, Sting did come out of that match the winner. He did win the WCW title from Hollywood Hogan then. But of course, it wasn't before there was a bit of a, I can't even call it a botched ending, necessarily. It looked like Nick Patrick knew exactly what he was doing in that match. Hopefully this match won't have a finish that is quite as bizarre or indecisive as that match was. And hopefully Hogan survives and doesn't just whittle into a mound of dust in that match. So that's your Bound for Glory lineup. It's the strongest lineup TNA could put together on paper. There's some good stuff on there. And they're going to go all out. This is their big show of the year. Hopefully they can deliver something special. And speaking of pay-per-views, just want to give a quick rundown here to the WWE Hell in a Cell show, which took place last Sunday after I did the show. I recorded the sound off a little bit early last weekend and gave my predictions in my Hell in a Cell preview. And I am proud to say that It was a clean sweep for the Solomonster. I went 6-for-6 with my prediction, save for the Cody Rhodes match, which was added to the show quite literally at the last minute, so obviously I would not have been able to predict what I didn't know. How someone like John Morrison, who has not won a match in forever, is suddenly rewarded with an Intercontinental title match is something that would be funny if it wasn't so sad. But anyway, I did not see the pay-per-view. So I'm only commenting on the results and the booking of the show, because again, it would be unfair of me to just read people's reports and then rant and rave about something I didn't see. But I was not able to watch a feed, because I certainly wasn't spending money on this show. But the main event, John Cena, CM Punk, Alberto Del Rio for the WWE Championship. As I predicted, Del Rio wins the championship back, which still makes the switch at Night of Champions even more puzzling. Why the hell John Cena needed the belt back so quickly is a decision that will be debated for, well, it won't be debated for more than probably a couple of days until we all forget about this and move on to the next show. But still, it was stupid. A stupid, short-sighted, boneheaded move, which seems to be the story of the year here with WWE booking. Vince McMahon has really been on quite a roll lately, changing his mind, constantly tearing up scripts, forcing rewrites of all the shows. He doesn't know what the fuck he wants to do. In fact, when Vince sits down to have a meal, I don't even know if he probably orders a meal. I could totally see this. Vince McMahon going to a diner. Just bear with me. I know Vince doesn't go to diners, but let's say he did. Vince goes to a diner, orders, eggs scrambled with some bacon, and they deliver the plate. And as they put the plate down, he says, I've changed my mind. I want to get a different order. I could just imagine. That's exactly what I picture Vince McMahon being like if he goes out to a restaurant to eat. And this is what the people in the company have had to put up with, and it's really given us some erratic booking over the last couple of months. Some good, mostly bad. Again, I don't understand that move. But Del Rio got the belt back, ironically, hey, just in time to go to Mexico as the champion. Is it a big angle after the match with Miz and R-Truth, who, of course, were fired a couple of weeks ago? They came out of the crowd, they got into the cage, locked the cell, beat up a bunch of referees, a bunch of cameramen. They beat up all three guys, Cena, Punk, and Del Rio. And all the WWE superstars came out to surround the cage. They were pounding on the cage, trying to get in. Triple H came down. Eventually, guys came down with bolt cutters. And they showed this entire angle, not still shots. They showed the entire thing in full on Raw the very next night. So, sucks to be you if you spent money on that pay-per-view for that big show-closing angle, and they showed the whole thing in full the very next night on Raw for free. Normally, I'm a fan of stuff like this, and this was okay. This was pretty well done, but I don't know. I wasn't as into it as some people were. I mean, they tried to make it out as such a wild and chaotic ending, and it was wild. But I feel like I've seen this done before, probably with Steve Austin. As a matter of fact, Steve Austin, yes, I think what I'm thinking of is the cell match on Raw once with Kane and Mankind. And Steve Austin got into the cage. He was hiding under the ring or something, and he had promised Undertaker and Kane that he was going to get to one of them that night. And it was Kane. And Austin was beating the crap out of Kane, and Undertaker's on the outside trying to get into the cell, climbing up the cell, got on the roof, and Austin was going crazy. This was obviously on a much grander scale, but I actually was a lot more into that angle than I was this one. This was missing something here. I don't know what it was, but anyway, that's how the show went off the air. We had Beth Phoenix beating Kelly Kelly at long last to become the Divas Champion in a move that was 1 month too late. I don't care what their logic was if, you know, oh, Beth's a heel, so we don't want her to win in her hometown at Night of Champions. Fuck that. Give me a break. She should have won the championship the first time she fought Kelly. Beth Phoenix should not be losing to Kelly Kelly at all. The way you build it up is Kelly Kelly, the Barbie doll, who nobody gives a chance of beating Beth, eventually will beat Beth. But instead, she just beat Beth the first time, beat her the second time. Now she finally loses. That was really dumb, but the right person has the belt now, so at the end of the day, that's really all that matters. Cody Rhodes and John Morrison had an Intercontinental title match, and Cody did something before this match that won him a lot of brownie points with me, and a lot of you, apparently, based on your comments. He ditched the egg-shaped Intercontinental Championship that we've been subjected to since 1998, and he brought back the classic Intercontinental title. It's slightly modified. If you really stare closely at the belt and compare it to the old Intercontinental title from years ago with the white strap, you'll see some subtle differences, not just the WWE logo. But for the most part, it's nearly identical to the old-school Intercontinental Championship with a white strap that was popularized by Shawn Michaels. And it's probably one of, it's either, if not my number one, then definitely my number two favorite design of any championship belt over the years. Cody is really thriving in this role. I mean, he's really doing a fine job. He's doing the best job he can do as the Intercontinental Champion. Although I will say, they did a video with him, a backstage interview for WWE.com after the show. And it was Cody Rhodes talking like a normal human being. You know, he didn't have these weird inflections and he sounds all nasal when he talks on TV. He sounds fake. He sounds stupid. And it's because they make him talk that way. I don't think it's because of the mask. At first I thought he talked that way because of the mask. It was like pressing up against his nose. But now that's just the way he talks. Either they told him to or he feels he has to go out there and portray a character. And then you watch some of these guys, including Cody in this interview, talking to the website backstage, and he's talking like a normal guy, and it just makes you wonder, why the fuck do they not allow these guys to just go out there and be regular people? I mean, if you have a character or a gimmick, fine. But you should be allowed to talk and speak like a normal person. And it's just stuff like that just gets on my goddamn nerves. It's just so stupid. Just let the guy go out there and talk like a normal human being. He's out there like he's reading some sort of, you know, fucking poetry or something. Just pisses me off. But Cody beats John Morrison, retains the championship, and I'll tell you what, if Cody Rhodes is willing to do what he did for the Intercontinental title, for the WWE title, then I would fully endorse a heel versus heel title match with him and Del Rio and put the strap on Cody Rhodes. I mean, what's another title change anyway, right? But if he'll bring back the old Big Eagle belt and get rid of that god-awful piece of bling that John Cena brought in, I'm all for it. Cody Rhodes for WWE Champion. I'll start the petition. Mark Henry and Randy Orton had a rematch for the World Heavyweight Championship inside Hell in a Cell. And wouldn't you know, for the second month in a row, Mark Henry pinned Randy Orton clean as a sheet in the middle of the ring to retain the World Heavyweight title. Brings a tear to my eye. And I must tell you that this is great news because this means that Randy Orton apparently will not be getting a championship match anymore. Well, eventually he will, but I don't see how they can go back to this match now. Randy Orton has cleanly lost to Mark Henry twice. Now, first of all, after losing to Mark Henry once, if it were up to me, he would move on to somebody else. Now, I understand in modern-day WWE we have that wonderful rematch clause, which does make sense in certain situations. For example, if somebody defends their championship and there's interference, if they're somehow screwed over or wronged, then yes, it is appropriate for that person to get a rematch. But I've never really been a big believer in this whole, well, I'm invoking the rematch clause. Which, again, I've talked about this before. It's something that started in the last several years in WWE. They would do it from time to time in years past, but now it's just become part of like the policy of the company, where every champion automatically gets a rematch no matter what. And I think that's pretty dumb. Well, guess what? Randy Orton just lost his second clean match to Mark Henry. Randy Orton, you move back down to the bottom of the ladder, my friend. No more title shots for you. Just like the soup Nazi. No more soup for you. No more title matches for Randy Orton. That's right, says the wrestling Nazi. Because Randy Orton does not deserve another shot at the championship. He is a loser. He lost twice to Mark Henry. He has nobody to blame but himself. And it looks as though they're transitioning over to a Mark Henry Big Show feud, which also, quite frankly, gives me the heebie-jeebies. But you know what? He put Big Show out of action. Big Show was out for, what, 2 months, 3 months, something like that. Definitely not the 4 months they talked about on television, but they exaggerate everything in wrestling. Fine, it's a new challenger for Mark Henry to defend his championship against and beat. Because God only knows that Big Show does not need to be beating Mark Henry and winning the championship. But it makes sense. Randy Orton goes back to the bottom of the barrel. He'll fight his way back up. I'm sure by Royal Rumble he'll get another title shot, and that's fine. And eventually he should, and he should win. But now is not that time. So I was very, very happy to hear about this. We had Sin Cara Blue against Sin Cara Black, and I think I predicted the heel would win, and I think that's what happened here. I actually just forgot. Whoever I predicted on that last show would win won, because I went 6-for-6 in my predictions. Damn it, Sheamus and Christian. Sheamus beat Christian, and Sheamus is on a roll of late. And we're going to talk more about that in the Raw review. As a matter of fact, we may as well talk about it right now. That was the whole pay-per-view. Raw on Monday night: the good, the bad, and the ugly. First, the big news: all of the WWE superstars aside from perhaps John Cena, CM Punk, and Randy Orton, who could not be bothered to show up, cast a vote of no confidence in the job that Triple H has been doing as COO, and they all walked off at the end of the show. We had also on the show a gigantic 12-man tag team match that lasted over 20 minutes and was, quite frankly, fucking awesome. I love that match. I'm going to talk about the main angle in a second. A lot of bad shit on this show, but let's talk about the good first. John Cena, CM Punk, Sheamus, Mason Ryan, and Kofi Kingston with Evan Bourne defeated Alberto Del Rio, Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, Cody Rhodes, Christian, and David Otunga. Which one of these does not belong? This was a really fun match. Went over 20 minutes and lasted through something like three commercial breaks. I will never complain about getting some good wrestling, and the crowd was really into this match too, which always helps. In fact, there were times during this match, if you go back and pay attention, where the hard camera was shaking, which is something you don't often see these days. In fact, the last time I saw that on Raw was over a year ago when the Nexus and Team WWE had their big final stare down in the ring before SummerSlam, right before they touched and they had a very brief brawl, and the camera was just shaking. It was quite an electric moment, and they had a little bit of that in this match. There's too much to recap. You all saw the match anyway, but to me, the real standout in this match was Sheamus. This guy has gotten over as a babyface in a big way, and the crowd was super into this guy. No wonder Vince McMahon is extremely high on him these days since the babyface turn. He also seemed like he had a fire lit under his ass. Sheamus was going crazy in this match. And the last 60 seconds, everybody hit their finisher, which is something I don't really like because it's just so contrived and so fake. But to their credit, it was never boring. You know, they were going a million miles an hour here, but it was all great. Punk hit the go-to-sleep on Del Rio. Cena gave David Otunga the attitude adjustment. Dolph Ziggler hit the zigzag on Cena, and then he got annihilated by a vicious brogue kick by Sheamus. I mean, I'm surprised the guy's head didn't land in the sixth row. And he just got turned inside out, the poor bastard. Sheamus got the pin. Babyfaces rejoiced. This was about as fun a match as you're going to see on Raw. Anybody who watched this match and said, oh, it sucks, or they complained, you're just complaining for the sake of complaining. Stop. Don't do that. I don't see how anybody could call this match anything but at least good, even if you don't think it was a great match. So, thumbs up on that. And the other thing in the good category, Santino Marella was back, beating Jinder Mahal with the Cobra in about 30 seconds. This sucked. They've clearly given up on poor Jinder, but I'm happy that Santino is all healed up from the car accident, so I'm putting this in the good category just to kind of pad it a little bit, because there's a whole lot of bad. So, Jerry Lawler was supposed to be back on this show, and he was, so I take it they were able to stop the bleeding. The problem is, he came back in the final segment on this show, and what's worse is that he then walked out. So I don't know what that means for this Monday, but for the second week in a row, we had 2 hours of Booker T on commentary. And while I paid the guy a compliment last week about how he at least tries to get guys over, as opposed to Michael Cole, who just buries everyone, as an announcer, Booker T sucks. He says the same things over and over, and what's worse, he talks over everybody else. So, yeah, Booker sucks as an announcer. Randy Orton had a match with Drew McIntyre at the beginning of the show. And it was nice to see a match open Raw for a change instead of the 20-minute promo. I will say that. And I'm also not against the idea of squash matches like this, but why Randy Orton? I mean, does he really need to squash people? Squash matches, it kind of goes against the entire point of a squash match. You know, the whole point is you use them to help get new talents over. Or back in the day when you would see these types of matches on Superstars and Wrestling Challenge, guys use them as a way to put over maybe a new finishing move, stuff like that. But what I hated here was what this led to, which was Mark Henry coming out and posing with the title, I guess as a way of taunting Orton after he beat him the night before. Why would he do this? Henry already beat the man clean twice on pay-per-view. It's done. It's over. As I said before, Orton does not deserve another title shot, so why even bother coming out to provoke him like this? They had a big pull-apart brawl, which apparently is going nowhere, because again, Big Show, it would appear, is getting the next title shot. Anyway, how weak does the WWE champion look right now, by the way? Alberto Del Rio does not feel special at all, especially when he's just one of half a dozen guys standing there on TV complaining about Triple H. You know, there he is in the background. David Otunga is leading the pack, the pack, I should say, and you've got Del Rio as just another guy in the background bitching and moaning. I mean, right now, as far as I'm concerned, Mark Henry has eclipsed this man as the dominant, most important champion in WWE. They didn't even bother mentioning that he had won the title back the night before at the pay-per-view until about half an hour into the show. It was so important that Alberto Del Rio won the WWE Championship back that it took them half an hour to even mention it on television the very next night. Fuck this company. Beth Phoenix and Natalya, they beat Kelly and Eve by DQ. After Kelly snapped, she went apeshit on Beth Phoenix outside the ring. This was basically an angle. It really wasn't a match. And I'm all for giving Kelly a harder edge. But what killed this for me was the fact that when she made her entrance, she was all smiles. If you go back and watch, you'll notice that when Kelly comes out, she came out just like she does every other week. Only this time she didn't have her belt. But she was posing, she was smiling, she was pointing. She didn't look upset at all that she had lost her championship the night before. And then all of a sudden, when the bell rings, it's like a switch goes off. And she gets all upset and she goes nuts. Now, unless there's the start of an angle here somewhere, where she goes all psychotic like Mickey James, or the bell rings and she freaks out like Festus, this was incredibly stupid. I mean, is it so hard to just come to the ring and not smile and point? John Cena does the same thing, but I've given up with him already. This was just stupid, stupid stuff. And then we have the final segment on this show. Your main event, yet another segment full of talking. This coming, by the way, from a COO who on television just came out a week or two ago and told all the heels in the ring that basically the way it used to be in this company is, you know, you would come out and you would fight. You wouldn't just talk. You would come out and, you know, beat people up. And as a matter of fact, that might have actually been on this show. It might not have been last week. Triple H said this, but Triple H apparently had no problem agreeing to a vote of confidence and putting that as his main event at the end of the show, which, well, none of this makes any sense anyway, so why should that make any sense? We had Wade Barrett claiming that it's an unsafe working environment. All the wrestlers, by the way, were surrounding the ring. Triple H was on the inside. And Triple H is, he proceeded to mock Wade Barrett for creating chaos of his own last year with Nexus, basically implying he was a hypocrite. Referee Mike Chioda said that he's never seen so much referee abuse, and he's now afraid to come to work. He should be thanking his lucky stars he still has a job after he failed that wellness test. Who the hell is he to speak up? Then we have a lady's voice who interrupted. I swear I thought it was Stephanie McMahon. In fact, it was Beth Phoenix who said that on behalf of the women, the very same women, by the way, that her and Natalya have been beating senseless or threatening to beat senseless now for months, she said that they're afraid something might happen to them. And Triple H said that nothing has happened to them. And Beth said, well, yeah, but it could. I just shook my head at that one. So at this point, Jerry the King Lawler comes into the ring and he said that he thinks the show is spiraling out of control. He said someone behind the scenes is trying to sabotage Triple H's job and he won't stop until he's gone. That being said, he said ultimately it's Triple H's fault because things are very dangerous for the performers. It's up to him to make sure that's not the case. Christian said enough talking, called for a vote. He voted no confidence with some other heels. Chioda and the referee said no confidence. Beth and the women said no confidence. Lawler said he had no confidence and he walked out. Then all the wrestlers started walking out. Michael Cole walked out and I cheered. Booker T got up to leave and I cheered even louder. By the way, on SmackDown, apparently Booker T clarified his actions on Monday night and said the real reason he walked out was because he needed to go to the bathroom. Can't really blame the guy. This segment had that same effect on me, too. Anyway, the cameramen put their cameras down. They walked out. Finally, Jim Ross got up and walked out. A decision he said on his blog that he now regrets. He should regret it. Triple H is the guy that gave you your job back, and you walk out on him? Where's the loyalty? John Laurinaitis walked out onto the stage, shook his head, and just walked to the back. This left Triple H in the ring all by himself, the new biggest baby face in the company now, all alone to be cheered by the fans. I'm glad to see this young guy getting himself over. I hope they give him a chance. Anyway, here's the thing. Do things really feel as out of control on Raw as WWE would have us believe. As I said on Facebook, I find this all completely preposterous. You know, you had the Nexus arrival in June of last year. I remember that show like it was yesterday. It was a 3-hour Raw, the first half of which I missed. I was on a trip to the Empire State Building. I had never been. I've lived in New York my whole life, and I've never been to the Empire State Building. And so I went on this little tour up on the top part of the building, and I ended up missing the beginning of this 3-hour Raw. And I didn't care. And I'm tracking the results of Raw on my cell phone on the bus home. And I'm reading the results of the show, and I'm just shaking my head. Obviously, I haven't missed much. This show was awful. Until the last segment. And that's when the Nexus came out during the John Cena CM Punk match. Beat up Cena, beat up Punk. It was complete chaos and pandemonium. The announcers got beat up, or at least Lawler did. Lawler got beat up. I remember Skip Sheffield overturned the announce table on top of him. They're throwing chairs. They're ripping up the canvas. It was really well done. And it felt so much more out of control than anything I've seen on WWE television in the last month or two. The WCW-ECW invasion in 2001 was more chaotic than this. I mean, hell, the go-home show to WrestleMania 13 back in 1997 was more chaotic than this. That's when Brett shoved Vince McMahon on his ass and started cursing on TV, and he was getting into it with Austin, and Sid was getting into it with The Undertaker, and even that felt more chaotic than anything I've seen on this show of late. So, to me, they're trying to push this idea that just doesn't feel legit. You know, it's like they want us to believe that things have never been worse, that the referees are in so much danger. As somebody pointed out in the mailbag this week, there was an angle many years ago in WWE, over a decade now, where the referees actually went on strike. I don't remember why, although I'd have to assume it was a safety thing. You would think that would be worse than this. I mean, hell, the referees went on strike, for crying out loud. But anyway, here's my other question. Who are Miz and Truth to be filing a lawsuit when just hours earlier they trespassed and assaulted multiple people, including referees and cameramen? We had Miz and Truth in a YouTube recording on this show talking about how they just filed a lawsuit against WWE and all this, and that's the only thing I could keep thinking was, you just trespassed and beat people up last night, and now you're the one filing a lawsuit against this company. Okay. The biggest thing of all that actually bothered me, why would Zack Ryder walk out? Zack Ryder was one of the superstars who came out on Monday, and he walked out. I mean, what an ungrateful little prick he turned out to be. The guy is getting more TV time on both shows under Triple H than he ever did under Vince McMahon. He's got a new t-shirt in the shop zone, a new headband, which are apparently selling very well on WWE Shop, for what it's worth. And yet the guy walks out? I mean, I don't care that he came back out after the show, went off the air, and changed his mind. You know, it was done for comedy for his YouTube show. Storyline-wise, if it didn't happen on TV, it didn't happen at all. And this guy walked out. Just makes no sense. Anyway, the ugly, there was a lot of bad on this show, but no bleeding from the anus. That's a plus. So, quite frankly, I don't know that I could ever put anything in the ugly category ever again after last week. I mean, really, does it get any worse than anal bleeding? I don't think it does. So nothing on this show was quite that atrocious, but this was still, to me, overall, not a good Raw show at all. The 12-man tag, great stuff. Go out of your way to find that match if you can. But it wasn't about the match. You know, this whole show now is based on this storyline. And I am intrigued as the next person to see where they go with this. I've heard rumors that perhaps Survivor Series, you'll have a team that has Miz and Truth and Nash and maybe Christian and Del Rio or something. Perhaps there's going to be some sort of new heel faction that forms with all the people that have been fired or wronged by Triple H. You know, if that's the payoff here, I could see where that could work. You know, it could be something cool. But I'm growing very impatient with whatever they're building to here, because none of this makes any goddamn sense at all. And all I ask is that what I'm watching makes sense and isn't insulting to my intelligence. That's all I ask for. I don't want to watch a show and feel stupid for watching it. And right now, I feel pretty goddamn stupid, because this angle that they pulled, this crap they pulled on Monday, was just completely embarrassing. One more piece of WWE news here. Darren Young has been suspended for a wellness violation. WWE.com reported on Thursday that NXT rookie Darren Young, or as we all affectionately like to call him, Black John Cena, has been suspended for 30 days, effective on October 5th, for a violation of WWE's wellness policy. They don't typically disclose what drugs or chemicals the person failed for, so perhaps we may never know. But he is going to be gone for 30 days and perhaps longer. You know, when you're in a position like a Darren Young or a Jimmy Uso, like last week I talked about his dumbass DUI arrest, when you're low on the totem pole in a company that has a lot of people under contract and people are constantly fighting for TV time, you've got to be really, really stupid. And I don't know what Darren Young's situation was. Perhaps it was something where it was a prescription for something that was bothering him and he didn't realize that there's an ingredient in it that's on the banned list. I'm not saying there's anything sinister going on here, but you got to be careful. You got to be more mindful of these types of things. WWE doesn't lose anything, you know. No skin off their back if they fire Darren Young. So it's better when you're in a position low on the totem pole like that to basically stay out of trouble. That way you're out of sight, out of mind. Even if the company's not going to push you, at least you'll have a job. It's basically how Funaki got by in that company as long as he did before he finally got let go. Let's talk some Ring of Honor, shall we? I was able to catch the second episode of the ROH TV show on a Sinclair affiliate near you, and it was another enjoyable show. Again, only two matches this week, but they're taking their time to introduce people to the key stars in ROH, and I like the way that they're going about doing that with the video packages and the testimonials from the different wrestlers. I think it's just really good. It's just a really easy, fun, quick way to spend 60 minutes. If you're a wrestling fan, there's nothing wrong with that. That's all anybody should ever ask for, is to be entertained and, you know, kill 60 minutes and then want to tune in to see the show the next week. And I think each week, and it's only been 2 weeks so far, but each week people will learn a little bit more about Davey Richards and a little bit more about Eddie Edwards and a little bit more about Haas and Benjamin or the Briscoes and all these different people. And you'll give people a reason to care about who these guys are, because otherwise it's just a bunch of big guys, you know, faceless, nameless, nobody cares. But I think they're doing a very effective job. Let's just go through the show segment by segment here. Jim Cornette was in the middle of the ring to start the show, and he brought out Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, the reigning Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions, for an interview. Cornette said that they had beaten the Kings of Wrestling last week. Great match. And Benjamin says that they have beaten every team in their way, and he talked about the Briscoes attacking them with steel chairs back in June in New York at, I believe it was an ROH iPay-per-view. And he says that he is disgusted that Jim Cornette has not given them the Briscoes. And Cornette says that the Briscoes were fined $5,000 for the attack. He said that the Briscoes said they only want to face Haas and Benjamin if the tag titles are on the line. And that is not a demand that Cornette is going to acquiesce to. And he's not going to reward their bad behavior, is what he said, by giving them a title shot. Perfectly logical. Makes sense. Haas and Benjamin demanded that the match with the Briscoes happen, and that was pretty much that. It was a very good way to establish that there is bad blood between these two teams, and they want revenge. Got a segment up next called Focus On, spotlighting the prodigy Mike Bennett. They made him out to be a big deal. Jim Cornette said that he's got huge upside. He's also got a big ego and was also heavily recruited by the big national companies. And I'm not sure if that's true, but that's fine. We want to make people think this guy's a big deal. I got no problem with that. Bennett is a guy who does not fit the typical ROH prototype, and the fans hate him for it. You know, he's a decent enough wrestler, but he's really nothing overly special if you look at the guy. What's great about him, though, is his supposed trainer, Brutal Bob Evans, who basically doubles as his manager. It comes to the ring with him, very similar to the coach character that managed Mr. Perfect for a brief time in the WWF after Bobby Heenan retired as a manager. He's kind of like his coach, in a way. And they're an entertaining heel combo, I will say that. Bennett says that people don't know what it's like to be trained by Brutal Bob and how cold it is at 4 a.m., getting up in the morning in Boston to go work out. And Bennett says that he's a great entertainer, and he looks around Ring of Honor in the locker room, and he sees nothing but boring wrestlers. And he says that he's going to be the next big action star like The Rock. Yeah, good luck with that. So that video segues into a Mike Bennett match against Jimmy Jacobs, who came down to the ring with Steve Corino in his corner. Yes, that Steve Corino. And by the way, someone had emailed me asking if the streamers that the fans throw are an ROH thing or what is it? The streamers are actually a Japanese thing. I don't think they use them in New Japan, but they do in other promotions like NOAH, All Japan. It's a sign of respect, basically, is what the streamers are. So I just wanted to point that out for the people who were not aware of that. Anyway, last time I watched ROH, Jimmy Jacobs and Steve Corino were both vile heels. So obviously they've reformed themselves because they were babyfaces here. They flashed their tweet of the week on screen during this match. And the tweet read, quote, "You should watch ROH because I'm Batman and Batman says so." End quote. Okay, that was the best tweet they could find worthy of being on TV. Really? That was pretty low rent, I will say. Fans chanted, "You can't wrestle," at Bennett during the match. Jacobs missed a senton at the end. Later, it led to Bennett hitting his box office smash, big finisher, which is basically just a Uranage-type move for the win. Pretty basic stuff. You know what? I got to say this. I see enough wrestlers using variations of the rock bottom as a finish. Now that we've got the real thing coming back next month, can we please try to have a little more creativity here? I'm begging people to come up with other finishing moves. Even if it's just a basic finishing move, you just steal it from somebody else. I'm so tired of seeing Uranages every week. Anyway, this week's Inside Ring of Honor segment talked about how former ROH champion Eddie Edwards got his nickname after breaking his elbow in a match. They showed footage of him diving out of the ring and injuring it, which didn't look too good. Didn't look too fun at all, actually. Doctors told him he'd need surgery right away. He would be out a minimum of 6 months, so naturally he taped it up. Wrestled the next night in New York in a tag team ladder match. Fool, I say. He said this showed the fans how dedicated he was to ROH, and that's when they started looking at him in a different light, started getting over a little bit more. He did have surgery the day after that, he said, and had 8 screws put into his elbow. Even now, the elbow looks pretty nasty. He's all scarred up and stuff. And they transitioned over to a video from here with comments from the ROH champion Davey Richards and the former champion Roderick Strong, who will challenge him for the championship on TV next week. And I actually thought Roddy in this segment was the weakest part of all of this. Just something about the way he was talking. I couldn't get into him. I mean, maybe I was still thinking of frat boy Chris when he showed up on Hulk Hogan's Micro Championship Wrestling that first show, but he was actually the weak link here, I think, in this whole segment. And Roderick Strong, not too many times you're going to hear me or other people calling him a weak link about anything, but I was not impressed with him here. Jay Lethal came to the ring, and they describe him as the top free agent in wrestling, who has now landed in Ring of Honor. And Kevin Kelly says that Lethal was last in ROH at the age of 21 and is now looking to create his own path. And El Generico comes to the ring, and he's described as a longtime charismatic favorite in Ring of Honor who defeated Christopher Daniels for the title back on June 26th. And ring announcer does the ring intros. I like how they make their main events feel special. We had Jay Lethal and El Generico, the generic luchador, as your main event for the Ring of Honor TV title. Both men are fan favorites. Generico won the title from Christopher Daniels, as I mentioned, a couple of months ago. And by today's standards, he may as well be Bruno Sammartino with the title reign that long. I love this match. I really did. I love this match. If you haven't seen it, it's worth going out of your way to see. To think that TNA had Lethal under contract and they just let him go because they had nothing for him, while taking into account that they do still have people like Hogan and Flair and Bischoff and Scott Steiner and all those guys under contract. Think about that. Makes you appreciate that a place like ROH still exists. Anyway, it's a TV title match, so we get a 15-minute time limit. It expires. The fans chant for 5 more minutes. Both wrestlers are begging the referee to agree to it. Jim Cornette comes out. He says, "We don't have 5 minutes left, but we have 3 left in the show. So if you want to, you can wrestle until the end of the show." And everybody, of course, loves this. They roar into approval. And the bell rings, Generico and Lethal begin trading a flurry of right hands, and the crowd is going absolutely bananas. The words of the late Gorilla Monsoon, just absolutely crazy. And they're all on their feet. This put a smile on my face right here. This really did. Lethal backs Generico into a corner. He heads into the opposite corner to get ready for some sort of move. And what he doesn't realize is that Generico was following him back out of the corner and into the opposing corner. And Generico caught Lethal with a Yakuza kick to the jaw that you have got to see to believe. I mean, he destroyed Lethal with this kick. And then he followed up with a half Nelson suplex for a near fall. Generico went for a top rope brainbuster. Lethal countered it. Ended up delivering a pretty weak-looking Randy Savage elbow, I must say, from the top rope. He missed. He did hit the elbow a few seconds later. He got a two count out of that. Generico went for another Yakuza kick, got nailed by a super kick, followed by the Lethal injection for the pinfall, and just like that, Jay Lethal is your new Ring of Honor television champion. This was just fantastic stuff. I mean, if nothing else, you got to watch the restart of this match after the time limit expired. Those last few minutes, it's just incredible stuff. And ROH is 2 for 2 so far. I'm very impressed by what I'm seeing. I look forward to seeing the third episode, whenever that may be. So to ROH, I say, keep it up. Time for this week's mailbag. And before we get to it, I just want to mention something here. For those of you who would like to submit questions for the main page mailbag on SEScoops.com, which typically it's a written mailbag, goes up every Thursday or Friday, or of late, sometimes every other Thursday or Friday. We tend to get some repeat questions or questions that are more personal in nature that might be more appropriate, quite frankly, for the show, but not for the main page. And we've run a little bit low of late, so we need your questions for the main page mailbag on SEScoops.com. If you have questions for that mailbag, you can submit them to SEScoops@gmail.com. That's SEScoops@gmail.com. And please remember that if you have questions specifically for myself, or questions that you would like to possibly have answered on the air on this show, those questions, keep sending them into thesolemonster@gmail.com, not the other email address. They're two separate things. So I just wanted to put that out there for people who might want to submit questions for the other mailbag. You can do so at seScoops@gmail.com. Got a message here from Khan from New York. Which do you think was the bigger letdown? Kevin Nash revealing himself as the person who texted himself, the anonymous Raw general manager never being revealed, or Rikishi being the one who ran over Stone Cold? To me, this is a slam dunk. Rikishi being revealed as the man to run over Stone Cold is a far bigger disappointment than any of the other two. For the simple reason that was the biggest storyline that the company had going. And I know that, you know, Kevin Nash and the whole text message into whatever it became right now is the biggest angle going on in the company, the power struggle, Triple H's COO, but this is nothing compared to that angle back in 2000. I mean, Stone Cold Steve Austin was the biggest star in WWE, and he went down with an injury. Of course, it was the angle was a cover for him going and having neck surgery, and aside from one appearance that he made a couple of months later, he didn't officially come back until almost a year later. It was actually a little less than a year. And they made a huge deal out of it. Who ran over Stone Cold? Who ran over Stone Cold? And again, biggest star in the company, biggest star in the business. And the best they could come up with was Rikishi. And on the one hand, I can kind of respect them trying to make a new star. I'm not sure if that was their goal or if they just got desperate and said, huh, we don't know who it's going to be, so let's just swerve people. And instead of revealing it as Triple H, who it turned out to be anyway, by the way, let's just go with Rikishi. And Rikishi got the biggest push of his career at that point, but he never really made it beyond a certain level. And I don't care what people say, when he was revealed as the culprit, it was a disappointment. And that had built over the course of almost a year. So to me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, that one was far more disappointing. Sam from Windsor, Ontario, Canada writes in, longtime listener since about episode 50. I just wanted to say that I'm loving Cody Rhodes as of late. His gimmick when it started was a bit odd, but it's been working well for him over the last couple of months. Ever since WrestleMania, I've been slowly liking Cody and feel he has great potential to be a top star in the company. His stock has skyrocketed to me, and just last Sunday revealing a new classic Intercontinental title at Hell in a Cell gives him even more of a unique feel. Just wanted to know if you feel the same way about him. Where do you see him a year from now? I hate questions like where do you see somebody a year from now or 5 years from now. I hate when they ask that question on job interviews too, Because in WWE, booking is so erratic that even though I see Cody Rhodes as being a potential future world champion, which I do, I mean, in today's day and age, it's a lot easier for somebody to become a world champion. I'm not sure if somebody like Cody Rhodes, who relatively speaking is a small man, would have come along 15 years ago, for example, or even 10 years ago. I don't think he would have been a world champion. But I think having two titles, the way they book things these days, putting a title on somebody that is relatively inexperienced and then snatching it away from them a month later. Cody should easily become a world champion. Is it going to happen within the next year? Honestly, I don't think so. I think it'll take a little bit longer than that. But I see big things in his future. But keep in mind that I, like a lot of people, said the same thing about Ted DiBiase back during Legacy days, when it was Orton, DiBiase, and Rhodes. And I always thought there was great potential in Cody, but DiBiase was always the chosen one. He was a great wrestler. He had great presence. There was that one time when it looked like he was going to break away from the pack and turn babyface, and the crowd wanted it to happen. And they did an angle with Cody Rhodes as well, if you remember. I believe it was on the same show that Dusty Rhodes, his father, was the guest host. And I think Orton had laid him out with an RKO or beaten him up at the end of the show. And I just remember the image of Raw going off the air with Cody Rhodes cowering in the corner, not in fear, but it looked as though he was on the verge of exploding because he had to sit back and watch his dad get beat up by Randy Orton. This is when Rhodes and DiBiase were seemingly under some sort of spell from Randy Orton, and they wouldn't fight back, and the crowd was chanting Cody's name, and he was not as big of a star as he is even now, back at that time. So I saw potential even then, but back to my point on DiBiase, look what happened to the poor guy. You know, through no fault of his own, although I guess he never really came out of his shell when they put Maurice with him. I think they put Maurice with him because they wanted to help elevate him to that next level. They wanted him to show more personality. And maybe he's not the most charismatic guy in the world. A lot of people said that about Shelton Benjamin as well. But DiBiase deserves to be a lot higher on the totem pole than he is right now. And instead, he's essentially been turned into a job guy. So even though I think there's great potential in Cody Rhodes, I don't know that I trust Vince McMahon enough these days to be patient enough to let Cody mature and get to that level. I hope they do, because I think there's a lot of potential there. And obviously, he's got the pedigree. When I first saw Cody, he was at the Hall of Fame. You know, years ago when Dusty Rhodes got in, he was in FCW at the time, and they allowed him to induct his father along with Goldust. And that was the first time I heard Cody Rhodes speak, and essentially heard him almost cut a promo during the Hall of Fame. And he's a lot younger then, and he was great. You know, all people could talk about coming out of the Hall of Fame was, how great of a speech Cody Rhodes did. So there's a lot of potential there. Got another question here from the Great White North. Kyle from St. Thomas, Ontario, Canada writes in. He wants to know, with the news breaking that CM Punk's merchandise sales recently surpassed that of John Cena, and Zack Ryder making the top 10 merchandise sellers in WWE, what are my thoughts on this? Well, I'm happy for both guys. You know, Zack Ryder, again, is a guy, kind of grassroots, started his YouTube show, wasn't getting anywhere in WWE, very frustrated with his lack of TV time, lack of a push, took the bull by the horns and got noticed. You know, he's on TV virtually every week now on Raw and SmackDown, which, again, makes him an ungrateful prick in storyline since he walked out on Triple H. But, you know, the thing about Zack Ryder is, and Kyle makes an interesting point here at the end of his email. We're talking, and last week on the show, somebody asked how far can they push Zack Ryder in his current gimmick. And I was talking about how he can only go so far, because I think it's going to be very difficult for people, for example, to look at Zack as a world title contender or a main event player, unless he goes heel and gets a harder edge, or he somehow just gets a little more serious. And Kyle makes an interesting point. He says, if an Elvis impersonator can be the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion in history, then the Long Island IZ can definitely be a mid-card title holder. And I can't debate that point. I mean, think about how ridiculous the Honky Tonk Man gimmick really is. I mean, here in 2011, and Honky Tonk Man held the Intercontinental Championship, which back then had far more prestige than it did today. I mean, it wasn't on the level of the WWF title, but it was maybe a notch or two below. You know, the Intercontinental title back then in the mid to late 80s Many people in the business, many wrestlers have commented that back then, people looked at that title almost as being the real championship in the company. It was the title that the workers held. You know, people like Tito Santana and Greg Valentine, Randy Savage, Ricky Steamboat. Eventually, you know, even people like Rick Rude and Kurt Hennig. Those are the guys that would go out there on these shows and really put on the performances in the ring that people like Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant couldn't do at that stage of the game. And Honky held that thing for almost a year and a half. Think about that. But he got over. People hated his guts. He would, in some cases, on the house shows, you know, he'd be main eventing with Savage. If Hogan, let's say, was working the, quote, A show, on the B show loop somewhere else in the country, Honky would be headlining. He would be main eventing. So you know what? Who knows? Maybe Zack Ryder could someday be a Honky-type character like that. I mean, for his sake, if he can make as much money as Honky Tonk Man did back then, I think he'd be in a very good position. But back to the merchandise stuff, it's great for them because the one way to get people's attention in WWE, especially Vince McMahon, is by selling a shitload of merchandise. And I know they go over these reports every week. Everyone gets copies of the reports, Vince McMahon, Triple H, whose merchandise is selling the best. And a lot of times you'll see the same names, John Cena, Rey Mysterio. There was a time when Hornswoggle was one of the highest merchandise sellers in the company, although I think he's cooled off. And the fact that Zach is cracking the top 10, it's only going to get him more television time. Because at the end of the day, the company wants to make money, even though sometimes they make some really boneheaded decisions that make you wonder if money is the most important thing to them, or if they like getting off on their own jollies by fucking people over. But it's the best way to get noticed in that company. People have taken notice of CM Punk. I mean, we've known that CM Punk is the real deal for some time. He's a great worker. He's a great promo. He's had great feuds with almost everybody that he's been in a program with. Rey Mysterio, now John Cena. Him and Randy Orton had some great matches. I mean, so the fact that Punk is number one, which I don't think is going to last very long. I really don't. And it's not a knock on Punk. I just think, you know, he got really hot with that T-shirt at Money in the Bank. Now he's got the ice cream bar T-shirt, and I'm sure they'll keep churning out new things for him. But John Cena is still the undisputed king of merchandise in WWE. And if he slipped 1 month, I think he'll probably be back on top next month. But that doesn't matter. Punk is up there. He's near the top. And as long as he stays there, he's going to continue to be a featured player. Orlando writes into the Sound Off. Wants to give a birthday shout-out to his wife, Doralyn, who celebrated a birthday yesterday on Saturday. So happy birthday, Doralyn. His question is, am I interested in watching the Shawn Michaels vs. Bret Hart rivalry DVD coming out later this month? If so, would you do a review on it after you watch it? Absolutely. I am very intrigued to see this DVD. I've been hearing nothing but great things. It's already leaked, I guess. Some people have watched it. Some people who I also got review copies of the DVD. I haven't heard one negative thing said about the DVD. One person who saw it said that they really don't leave any stone unturned. They talk about everything, including even right down to the rope breaking in that Hart Foundation Rockers tag match back in 1990 when the Rockers actually won the belts. And then the belts got taken away from them a couple of days later, so it never... I don't think the match ever aired on TV. It never got officially recognized as a title reign. I mean, they go all out talking about the history between Bret and Shawn on this DVD, so... And it's going to be part of a series. In fact, I believe the next one they're working on is possibly a Austin Rock DVD, where they can get the two of them sitting in a room together, perhaps being interviewed by Jim Ross, which would be quite appropriate. And... I think it's a great idea for a series. You know, they need to do something different. DVD sales have been down, although DVD sales have been down across the board for everybody. It's just, it's a bad economy. People are not spending as much money on stuff like this. Everything suffers. But it's something where if it sounds unique, you know, and it catches on and gets people's attention and people think, wow, these guys aren't just going to sit down and bullshit us. This could actually be kind of cool. It's almost like a WWE shoot interview, even though it's really not. I'm all for it, because I haven't bought a WWE DVD in a while, and I'm not saying that they haven't made any good ones. I know for a fact they've made a bunch of good releases, but between the fact that I don't have any more room on my shelf, and the fact that they just haven't come out with anything recently that has intrigued me enough to want to spend, you know, $20 or $25 on a DVD, this is one, obviously, that I'll be picking up, and if I watch it, absolutely, I will review it on the first Sound Off I do after I watch the DVD. Comes out October 25th, by the way, for those who are interested. Scott from Arizona wants to know, with Alberto Del Rio's car being parked so close to the fans when he comes out, do you think it's only a matter of time before an angry John Cena fan throws a soda or something at a pricey convertible? I'm surprised they haven't done it already, quite frankly. Maybe they have, we just haven't seen it. You know, you keep a car like that parked there long enough, you're just asking for trouble, especially if the guy's a heel. I mean, back in the day, that car would be messed up a lot worse than it ever would be in these days. I mean, people back then took their wrestling very seriously. But, you know, and again, the first person to throw something on the car would get kicked out. And I'm sure they know that, so perhaps that's why nothing's happened. Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't happened already, quite frankly. Matt writes into the Sound Off, been a listener since episode 156, where I talked about TNA's appalling treatment of its talent. Has two questions regarding the Great Khali. Question number one, Khali had two rather appalling matches with Mark Henry last week. Well, kind of one match, the other one wasn't really a match. Watching him in the ring, I couldn't help but wonder, what the hell is wrong with him physically? It looks like he can barely walk, let alone wrestle. Does he have some sort of illness, or did he sustain a major injury that left him in this state? You know, a lot of people have talked about the fact that he has the same thing Andre the Giant had, which is acromegaly, I believe, a form of giantism. I don't believe that that's the case. I've heard both. I've heard that he has it. I've heard that he doesn't actually have it. Clearly, there's some sort of issue of some kind here. I believe he does. And it's been talked about that people like that don't necessarily have a very long life expectancy. In fact, when Andre died, he lasted a lot longer than people thought he would, than doctors thought he would. And Andre passed away when he was, I believe, 46 or so. Great Khali's about 39, 40, somewhere in that range, I believe. And he clearly has some sort of health issue. It's not just that he's a big, slow guy. His knees are also in very, very bad shape, obviously, from his enormous size and girth. It's going to take its toll on your knees a lot. And it's definitely more of a health-related thing. Plus, he's just not that good. I mean, let's just be honest here. He's not a good wrestler. And he has gone further in WWE than he had any right to. I mean, I remember when he first came in, he had a presence. He was a big dude. He was a scary-looking guy. And that was fine for the first couple of months. By that point, I was already over it, you know? And look at what he's accomplished. He's gone from heel to face to heel to face. He's been a world heavyweight champion, something that Dave Bautista himself once said in an interview was completely embarrassing, the fact that Khali held that title. He's been a comedy character. He's gone serious with the Jinder Mahal stuff. Now that's over. Now he's just a big guy over 7 feet tall, 400 pounds, who's getting beaten down like a jobber by people like Mark Henry. And again, it's not like he's getting beaten up every week. Mark Henry's the world champion. He's also a big, scary dude, so it's okay. But what the hell else can you do with this guy? I mean, the guy has gone about as far as he can go. If I took over WWE and there were budget considerations that had to be made and I was told, all right, we need to get rid of a few people. We need to cut the fat. Let's pick five guys initially that we got to get rid of. Khali would probably be the first one on my list, to be honest with you. Because I wouldn't even know what to do with the guy. Everything that you could do with him has already been done. I don't want to do the same thing. I'm not going to put the belt back on him. And people just don't take him seriously anymore. So, you know, that's kind of the deal with Khali. The second part of Matt's question deals with an incident that took place when he was training out in California to be a wrestler. He wants to know, is it true that Khali killed a guy in the ring? And the answer to that question is yes and no. Basically, I believe it was back, God, it could have been 10 years ago at this point. I had to look up the name of the organization because I knew it was in California. And Khali was actually training at a place called All Pro Wrestling, APW. And he was in there with a guy by the name of Brian Ong, O-N-G. And he gave him a flapjack. I don't know if it was in training or if it was a kind of a mock match. It was probably in training. Gave him a flapjack. The guy suffered a concussion. And I don't remember if he went into a coma first or if it was instantaneous, but he died as a result of that concussion. That is true. He was in there with Khali. Khali executed the move. The guy died. But he had suffered a concussion just previous to that incident. This would have been the second consecutive concussion in a very short period of time that this guy suffered. And that first concussion, really, he shouldn't have been allowed to get back in the ring and do anything at that point. And the APW people let him wrestle. They let him train. He got hurt again. He died. Came out later on that he wasn't even wearing the proper gear to protect himself or anything like that. Just a complete fuck-up on the part of the people at APW. And a court of law actually found the same thing, because the family brought a lawsuit against the organization. I don't believe they held Kali accountable for what happened, because it was an accident. And APW lost. And the family was awarded damages, I think, of over $1 million or something like that. So it's just a sad situation all around. You can't really blame Kali for what happened. I'm not going to say, oh, the guy's a murderer. But yes, he was in the ring with somebody at the time, executed a move, the guy got hurt, the guy passed away. But I think he gets a bad rap for that, because it's just a shitty situation that, quite frankly, the people at APW deserve to be held accountable for. David from Silver Spring, Maryland, writes in. He could not get behind the whole vote of confidence segment at the end of Raw last week. He said that he knows it's a storyline, but instead of feeling concerned for their safety, shouldn't the majority of the superstars be angry about not being pushed, or in case of the Divas, not having long enough matches? That would have been something to, quote, walk out on. Absolutely. And that's, you know, part and parcel with what I was trying to talk about earlier and complaining about the end of Raw last week. Maybe they've got an amazing payoff in a month or two to where this storyline is going. But for the 20-minute main event segment on Raw last week, it was a complete waste of time. Why is everybody all of a sudden so concerned about unsafe working conditions? Anybody listening to the show could think of 10 different incidents off the top of their head, if you gave it 5 seconds worth of thought, of other times on Raw, on SmackDown, where you could actually make the argument that it's an unsafe working environment. Not just the Nexus attack last year, but if we gave it some thought, we could probably think of other examples that would actually make sense. I mean, what's happened recently that would make people think, oh my God, I'm in grave danger? Miz? Really? You're in grave danger from the Miz? Give me a break. Nissim writes in and talks about Cody Rhodes and the new classic Intercontinental belt that he brought back, the recent rebirth of the WWE Tag Team Division, which, really? What rebirth are we talking about here? Because I certainly haven't seen one. I mean, I know they want to build the Tag Team Division back up. You know, they're pushing Air Boom. We saw Miz and Truth as a team, Swagger and Dolph. To me, that hardly constitutes a rebirth, so let's not get ahead of ourselves yet. But anyway, his question, do I see people like Randy Orton going for the Intercontinental title? Perhaps John Cena challenging for the United States Championship? He thinks it would add some prestige to both belts and to the wrestlers. It would show that those wrestlers have respect for all titles and are not just hungry for being the top dog. If you read the main page mailbag on SEScoops.com, probably a couple of weeks ago, I answered a question just like this, and my response goes to the heart of what you're saying. One of the ways to build the prestige back up, for example, for the Intercontinental title, besides bringing back the old title design, which I think was a huge plus, one of the things you could do is take some of your top stars who aren't currently involved, let's say, in a world title program. You mentioned Randy Orton. He would be a perfect candidate to challenge for the Intercontinental Championship. He doesn't deserve another world title match right now. He'll get one eventually, but he's got to work his way back up. You know, it looks like they're going in a different direction now with Mark Henry. The timing is perfect for Orton to challenge for the Intercontinental title. Plus, he's had matches recently with Cody Rhodes. He busted poor Cody Rhodes open on SmackDown a couple of weeks ago, left him laying in a pool of his own blood. Cody can't be happy about that. The timing would be perfect to put the two of them together. And I would hate to do something that would stall Cody Rhodes' momentum. So for Randy Orton to, let's say, beat him clean with an RKO and take his championship, I'm not sure I'd be behind that idea. But if Orton won the title, you know, there's no doubt it would bring a little bit of prestige back to the belt. Eventually he could either drop it back to Cody, perhaps drop it to somebody like Daniel Bryan, and Orton moves back up and challenges for the world championship in a couple of months. Meanwhile, you've given the title some rub, and the Intercontinental belt means more than it did 3 months ago or 6 months ago. Back in the day, people like Ricky Steamboat, Randy Savage, now granted, this was before Savage won the world title, but still, you had big stars that would challenge for the title. 2001. You had Chris Jericho as the Intercontinental Champion after he had already pretty much established himself as a main event player. Triple H, during the two-man power trip days, Austin had the WWF title. Triple H won the Intercontinental Championship. Kane beat him for the Intercontinental Championship. There was a period of time where they were trying to do that. But that was 10 years ago. 10 years ago don't mean shit these days. It doesn't mean anything. You've got to start from scratch and work your way back up. I actually think that's a fine idea. Trust sends a letter into the sound off here. SC Scoops reported earlier this year that Rey Mysterio's contract was running out and that Johnny Ace had been put on the case to try to get him re-signed. The WWE managed to tie Rey to a new deal. I believe they did, and the only reason I say that is because they planned this whole big push for Rey over the summer. And in fact, they put the WWE title on him. Now, granted, he lost it less than 24 hours later. As a matter of fact, he lost it within 2 hours of winning it. And they did have a very big push planned for him. Then he got hurt. And they would not have been pushing him at all if he would have relented and not signed a new deal. So I'm assuming he did. Second question here. Would it not be a good idea to have Rey win the Royal Rumble if and when he comes back next year? It's been a while since we've seen a multiple-time winner of the Rumble. Plus, Rey deserves a shot at the WWE title at WrestleMania. No, he does not, actually. I don't think Rey... if Rey got a title shot at WrestleMania, then fine if it made storyline sense. But why does Rey Mysterio have to get a WWE Championship match at WrestleMania? What has he done to deserve one? You know, he's gotten a World Heavyweight Championship match. He won a couple years ago. Is that not enough? As far as him winning the Royal Rumble again, I have no interest in seeing that. Rey's a very talented guy. Got nothing against Rey Mysterio. I myself am not a fan of the same person winning the Royal Rumble. You know, you got to change it up a little bit. We've seen a lot of guys do that. Shawn Michaels has won the Rumble twice. Steve Austin has won the Rumble 3 times. But we don't need to see the same person winning again. You're going to have 40 men, most likely, in the Rumble again next year. I think this is going to be the new thing now every year. 40 guys instead of 30. And you know what? If it makes sense for the same person to win, go for it. But Rey Mysterio ain't winning anyway because he just had a second knee surgery on his PCL in his already injured knee. And they originally wanted him back in time. He wanted to be back in time for WrestleMania. But even that was going to be a conservative timetable. And now with the second knee surgery, I don't even know how likely it is that he'll be back in time for Mania. So you can completely forget about the Royal Rumble. That ain't happening. Last question here from Trust. Why did Vince McMahon pick John Cena over Dave Bautista to be the face of the company? Dave did have a more spectacular breakout, and he was already on the Raw brand. I believe it had to do with merchandising. Cena, when he went babyface, but he was still kind of doing the Doctor of Thugonomics gimmick, that's really when his merchandise sales started to take off. When they put the WWE Championship on him and then they moved him over to the Raw brand, he took off. And his merchandise sales were through the roof. And I think that, coupled with the fact that just generally he's a more charismatic guy, at least in their view, he was willing to do all the publicity and the PR and go above and beyond what anybody else, including Batista, was doing at the time. And to them, he was just a more versatile performer than Big Dave was. But the merchandise, I think, had a lot to do with that. And, you know, as they say, the rest is history. Say what you want to about John Cena, but he still is the undisputed merchandise king of WWE. I don't care if CM Punk, you know, beat him in merchandise sales for 1 month. You know, if CM Punk is still beating John Cena in merchandise sales 3 or 4 months from now, I'll be impressed. That's why the company went with Cena. Dan from Bristol, England, writes in with some feedback here. Loved your interview on the last podcast. I'm a journalist in England, and I do a lot of interviews every week, and yours was excellent. Personable, but at the same time probing. Have you ever thought of making it a regular thing? While I love the podcast, and I've been listening to it since around the start, and long that it may continue, you deserve to be doing wrestling journalism or broadcasting full-time and making some money from it. Anyway, keep up the good stuff, mate. I appreciate that a lot. I got a lot of comments like that, actually, after the interview I did with Mr. Napolitano last week. And I very much appreciate that. As far as making it a regular thing, I've said this before, this is not an interview show. Meaning you have plenty of wrestling-oriented podcasts out there. There's plenty of them. Okay, do a simple Google search, and you will find plenty of wrestling shows that feature interviews on a weekly basis with people. And in some cases, very big names from wrestling. And in some cases, they're very good shows. Some of them are good, some of them are not so good. So if that's your thing, you've got plenty of choices out there. I've always said that this show was intended to be one person's voice, you know, covering whatever subject matter, quite frankly, comes to mind, any subject matter from the wrestling world of previous week that's of interest, whether it be a top story, reviewing the TV shows, some big story that really irked me the wrong way, and I go on a rant about this. I take your questions. It's a very simple format, but it's very effective, and it works, and people seem to like that. And every now and then, through various connections that I've been able to establish, if I gain access to somebody who I think would make for an interesting interview, whether they're a big name or not, and I've actually found that the people who aren't necessarily the biggest names tend to sometimes be more interesting than the ones that are big names. Because you can hear interviews with top names all the time. They say the same stuff over and over again. That interview I did a year ago this month with the Zombie, okay, the arsonist, Tim Arson, who's a really good guy. He's wrestled stateside. He's wrestled in Puerto Rico. I thought the stories behind how the whole Zombie character came about that night on ECW and all that, and I just really enjoyed talking to him, and I thought it was a great interview. And the interview I did with George Napolitano I thought was even better. Because his history in the wrestling business is far deeper than Tim, and quite frankly, a lot of people out there. And he's got a lot of stories to tell. He's befriended, again, some of the biggest names that you could ever imagine in the wrestling business. And I was very, very happy with the way that interview came out. If I have any regrets, my only regret, besides not being able to kind of up the audio quality, but that was out of my control, my only regret would be I wish it went longer, quite frankly. I probably could have worked a few more questions in there, but I didn't want to take up too much of his time. As far as in the future, I'm sure I will do more interviews in the future, but it's going to be very selective. So, you know, if an opportunity presents itself and the person is willing to do it, and I think that they would make for an interesting subject for you guys, I go to work. And when I say I go to work, I start doing my homework, you know, with whatever free time I have. I have a regular day job. I work on my own free time with these things when I do it. I'll do my research. I'll put together questions. I'll look at the list of questions I have. I won't be happy with it. I'll blow it up. I'll start all over again. And I'm kind of a perfectionist in that way. And everything just came together perfectly for the interview last week, and all the feedback I've gotten is really, really cool. So thank you for that. It really does mean a lot to me. James Alexander writes in, "It's come to my attention that Dolph Ziggler has a brother in FCW with a much better last name. That last name being Pierce. So Nick Pierce or any combo like that works better to me than Dolph Ziggler." I'll tell you what, Nick Pierce, not a bad name at all. Although, again, how do you work that into the storyline if, let's say, Dolph Ziggler comes out on TV one day and starts referring to himself as Nick Pierce? I mean, Nick is his real name. You could just call him Nick Nemeth. We know they'll never do that because they'd like to stay away from people using their actual names. Nick Pierce? Hey, if you can come up with a story for it, I think that's a fantastic name. It's a lot better than Dolph Ziggler. Kyle writes in, very upset. He watched Raw last Monday night. Says that the fact that people are being booed for wanting to work in safe conditions astounds me. WWE is portraying unionization as evil, and their giant corporation is being benevolently good, which is both laughable and tasteless considering the private contractor bullshit loophole WWE pulls to avoid giving the men and women who bust their asses for them the same benefits every other major sports organization does. To me, this whole storyline shows how detached Vince is from the real world these days. He believes the way to get inside the hearts of the middle class in America is to make the multi-million-dollar corporation that is abusing their workers the good guys. Well, that's one way to look at it. WWE kind of portraying unionization as evil. I didn't really think of it that way, but you kind of have a point there. And obviously, Vince McMahon does believe that in real life. We don't have to get into the whole issues of past situations where wrestlers have nearly unionized in WWE. Of course, the famous example of Jesse Ventura around the time of WrestleMania 2, trying to gather everybody together to confront Vince McMahon and form a union, and supposedly Hulk Hogan was the mole who told Vince and sabotaged the whole thing. So, yeah, it's an interesting way of looking at it. I didn't really think about that too much. Sean in Geneva, Switzerland, originally from Ireland, writes in, "Belated happy birthday to you, sir. Soon you will be eligible to join the TNA Retirement Center down in Florida, along with Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan. Just wanted to say that I really enjoyed the interview you conducted with George Napolitano. I thought there was a nice flow to the interview and structured very well. Seems as though you must work in media or communications, or else you are a natural at it. It was a nice insight into the glory days. I've been a long-term listener since 2008. Sound Off has been a constant fixture in my weekly schedule ever since, whether it be on the way to work or on my travel. So that comes from Sean in Geneva. I appreciate that. Speaking of interviews, one of our listeners here, Brendan, wrote in, just letting you know that we interviewed Kurt Angle on our radio show in Australia today. He discussed things like UFC, Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff re-signing, Bobby Roode being 10 times better than John Cena, and his shoot fight with Brock Lesnar. You can go to michaelanddando.com. To be honest, he sounded a little out of it. You might want to give it a listen. Keep up the good work. So Brendan does good work down there. I haven't listened to the show with Angle yet, but apparently it may have been a dandy from Dando. See that little joke I made there? God, that was lame. So anyway, check that out. That comes from Brendan. Andrew from Michigan, he's been a listener since about episode 18. Just heard your interview with George Napolitano, and you know what? He said something that took me back. It was when he mentioned the IWCCW. I remember as a younger lad, I came across it during the early days of cable when we got some station out of New Jersey called WWOR, which, by the way, still is a station. It's actually here in the entire tri-state area. SmackDown, here in New York, used to air on Channel 9, which was WWOR. It used to be a UPN affiliate. Anyway, he says, I think, but yeah, he totally forgot, Andrew did, about that promotion, and I guess the interview jogged his memory. So he said, great work as always. Keep it up. Can't wait for your next interview. So that comes from Andrew. Shea Burr writes in, I was watching Raw last week when Mark Henry said that the Big Show would have the shortest return in WWE history. It got me thinking, who does have the shortest return in WWE history? And to me, the answer is obvious. The shortest return in WWE history would have to be Vince Russo, person who we talked about at the beginning of this podcast. There was a period of time in WWE, I believe it might have been back around 2005 or so, that Vince McMahon actually hired Vince Russo back. He was bringing him back to be part of the creative team, if not head the creative team. And then when Russo found out that he would basically be part of a committee and things were not as they used to be, he bowed out. So he was hired for the job, and then he never even worked a day in that job. I'll never forget that, too. They even put an announcement on WWE.com mentioning that Vince Russo was back in the company. Everybody knew about it at that point, and it didn't quite work out that way. And I think as a WWE fan, no matter how much shit we've been through over the last couple of years, I think we definitely got the better end of that one. So dodged a huge bullet there if you're a WWE fan. If you're a TNA fan, not so much. If you have questions for the mailbag or any kind of comments that you want to direct to me directly, you can email me at thesolomonster@gmail.com, all one word, thesolomonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/solomonster. You can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/thesolomonster. And in fact, you can now subscribe to my channel on YouTube. I am planning on uploading more stuff there in the future. You can hit me up. It's youtube.com. My username is thesolomonster. And I've had people write in saying, well, if I've got iTunes and I've got YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, that officially makes me part of the Fatal 4-Way. And I haven't called it the Fatal 4-Way, and in fact, I'm not going to call it the Fatal 4-Way. I have come up with a perfect name for those of you who follow me on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and iTunes. I call it the Fantastic Four. That's what that is. So if you're on all four of those things, you are officially part of the Fantastic Four, and iTunes is another way to go. You can subscribe in iTunes, subscribe to this very podcast. It is free, does not cost you anything. And we had a bonus show last week, the interview with Mr. Napolitano. A lot of you were writing in on Facebook, when is it going to go up? When is it going to go up? Well, if you were an iTunes subscriber, you knew exactly when it was going to go up. It was there waiting for you. So get me on iTunes if you are not already a subscriber on there. And if you are, do me a favor and leave some positive feedback. You can rate the show, I think, on a star system and leave some feedback if you want to. It helps increase the overall score of the show relative to all the other podcasts on iTunes. So that's kind of cool if you would be so kind as to do that. And lastly, a word about Steve Jobs, the co-founder and CEO of Apple, who died on Wednesday after a lengthy battle with pancreatic cancer. Though it hasn't been confirmed whether he died from the disease or from complications of the liver transplant he had in 2009. He was one of the most successful entrepreneurs in American history, although his impact has been felt the world over. The man was a visionary in a lot of ways, and hopefully everyone who was complaining the day before his death about the announcement of the latest iPhone and how it isn't the iPhone 5 can just shut up now and see that there are more important things in life. Cancer does not discriminate based on one's bank account, although it certainly does help, but it couldn't give Steve Jobs a new pancreas. And now he's gone at only 56 years of age, too young for anyone to die. My mother has beaten cancer 3 different times and is only a few years younger than Steve Jobs was, so I can appreciate what it's like to go through such an ordeal. And the fact that she's still here today is something I am thankful for every day. I'm hardly an Apple fanboy. In fact, the only Apple product I currently own is an iPhone. And it's incredible how much I've come to rely on it in my everyday life. But at the end of the day, it's just a slab of glass and steel. And really what's important is that when the man had a vision, and he had a lot of them, he turned it into a reality. His impact will be felt for generations to come. And really, how could you not respect something like that? My condolences to his family and friends. May he rest in peace. That's going to do it for me this week. Be well, stay safe, thank you for your continued support of the show. See you right back here next week for another Sound Off on SEScoops.com.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solar Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.